Tuesday, January 16th, 2018, you are listening to the Daily Dose Sports Podcast, and I am your host, Clint Daly, coming to you from the Mile High City, Denver, Colorado. You know, we get together every weekday, and we talk sports with a dose of common sense and maybe just a little bit of sarcasm here or there. And we are happy to have you with us today on this Tuesday. I hope that you had a long weekend. I don't know that you did. I just am hoping that you did. I hope that you're just getting back to work today and that you had that three-day weekend for Martin Luther King Day yesterday. And if not, well, I hope that you got paid time and a half at least yesterday for working while many of us laid around the house all day and did absolutely nothing. Or maybe you went out and you participated in some community events. Here in Denver, it was freezing cold yesterday. Like it was 1 degree or something yesterday at times. So we didn't do a whole lot here in Denver. But hopefully, you know, you got around to doing whatever it was you had to do yesterday. And if you had to work, maybe you got at least some extra money that we could all use after the holidays. Hey, if you would like to contact us, we would love to hear from you. Feel free to hit us up on email, dailydosesports@gmail.com, or go find us over on Facebook or Twitter. We have had a few people adding us lately over there. Both of those handles are at Daily Dose Sports, and we would love to hear from you. You know, we've got a lot to get to on this Tuesday morning. You know, yesterday, we gave you a flashback show because of the holiday. So today, we still have to recap a crazy weekend of NFL playoffs. Plus, we do have some breaking sports stories that we have got to get to. And let's jump into those right now because we have a lot to get to today. The University of Arizona has apparently reached an agreement to hire former Texas A&M coach Kevin Sumlin as their new football coach after firing Rich Rodriguez for whatever it is that they say they fired him for. Like they said, there was an investigation into some sexual misconduct within the university, and then they said it didn't really turn up anything, but we're going to go ahead and fire him anyways because, well, let's be honest, he's not winning that many games, right? Now, this hiring of Kevin Sumlin should come as good news for all the Wildcats fans down in Arizona, especially those who are worried that their quarterback, Khalil Tate, might leave. There was some talk, and there were some other coaches being named. Tate didn't seem that thrilled with some of the options out there, so there was a big worry that maybe Khalil Tate might leave. You know, Tate had a very impressive sophomore season. He threw for nearly 1,600 yards. He rushed for over 1,400 yards. He was responsible for 26 touchdowns. So you know it's a good thing he's not leaving now. Got Kevin Sumlin? That should be a very good fit, right? Arizona needs Khalil Tate to stick around. Then again, we did see Kevin Sumlin down at A&M, right? And we did have a number of quarterbacks transfer to get away from Kevin Sumlin, right? I mean, Kyler Murray left to go to Oklahoma. Kyle Allen transferred to Houston. Of course, we saw Kenny Hill left. He went to TCU. Tate Martell went from A&M to Ohio State. So it might not be that sure of a thing that Khalil Tate does stay. Because it almost seems, and I'm not positive of this, it almost seems like quarterbacks can't wait to get away from Kevin Sumlin. Name the good quarterback he has had. But hey, at least you should get some big-time recruits down at Arizona now with Sumlin, right? If there's one thing you can say about Kevin Sumlin, he does recruit. He does go get some big-time players. So, Arizona will have that positive. And, you know, another thing that they'll probably have less girlfriends on the sideline than Rich Rod had. So, I mean, that's a huge plus, too. Now, I realize it happened a few days ago, but longtime sports announcer Keith Jackson passed away over the weekend, 89 years old. Keith Jackson announced a number of sports for ABC throughout his career. He announced Major League Baseball, NBA basketball, boxing, auto racing. He did some PGA Tour stuff. He did the USFL when it was out, the Olympics. He worked briefly in college basketball, did some work with Dick Vitale. He also did do some Super Bowl stuff for ABC back in 1988. During his on-air tenure, Keith Jackson actually was the guy that kind of dubbed the Rose Bowl the granddaddy of them all. He was the first guy that we know of called Michigan Stadium the Big House. You know, if aliens like land here on Earth, and they were to ask me, okay, what's college football? And what does college football sound like? Keith Jackson might be what I would play to them.
It is the third Saturday in October, and the show is on one more time in Knoxville, Tennessee. One of the premier games in college football about to be played. Nearly 100,000 faithful will huddle today in East Tennessee to shout, Roll Tide to the deepest regions of the Smokies and dance to Rocky Top until there is no energy left.
Keith Jackson was college football. He sounded like your grandpa telling you stories around the fireplace. He always had a grace. He always had a class about everything he did. And you could just feel his love for the game coming through. You could just feel his admiration for the people that he covered coming through in his broadcasting style. That voice of Keith Jackson just takes you back to what college football was. If you heard that voice, if you know that voice, you hear it now and you say, oh man, that's college football. That's what it sounds like. That's it. We will miss Keith Jackson. College football will miss Keith Jackson. Lost a few good announcers lately. Lost Dick Enberg, lost Keith Jackson. A few guys. I guess it's just that kind of time. There was just an era of great broadcasters, especially guys that really had those recognizable voices. Lost a few of those guys lately. They will, without question, be missed. Hey, coming back, we have a few other sports stories that we've got to discuss, including another opening in the NFL job market. But we also need to discuss that NFL divisional round of the playoffs. It was a wild weekend in the NFL, and it finished with a bang. We're going to get to all of it right after this. Before we do get to the NFL, we do have a little bit of news coming out in Major League Baseball. The San Francisco Giants have agreed to acquire former National League MVP Andrew McCutchen in a trade with the Pittsburgh Pirates, according to a number of reports. It is not immediately clear what Pittsburgh is going to get for McCutchen, but McCutchen's a five-time All-Star outfielder. And don't forget, the Pirates were kind of garbage when he got there, right? He helped that franchise, led the club to three consecutive postseason appearances from 2013 to 15. And doesn't it just kind of feel like the San Francisco Giants are due for a run? Like, we're kind of forgetting about the Giants, aren't we? Yeah, they still have a team. I kind of forgot about them. All the talk right now in the National League. Of course, all the talk right now is in the American League. But any talk you have in the National League right now, it's the Dodgers. What are they going to do this year? They're going to go change their pitching staff at all? How are they going to get their lineup to maybe be a little more effective in the postseason? Or maybe the Cubs. Can the Cubs bounce back from kind of that rebound year after winning it all? We know the Washington Nationals, still a very talented roster. You would think they would be in there somewhere. But the Giants are like a distant memory. And you have to think they're going to make a run soon, aren't they? They don't stay down for long. We always sit there and look at the Giants and say, hey, every few years, you can kind of expect them to contend at least for a pennant. They haven't done that lately. And we've all kind of waited for it. They might not stay down for much longer. Maybe, just maybe, Andrew McCutchen is the start of something for San Francisco. They need to get something going. Hey, head coach Mike Mularkey has agreed to part ways with the Tennessee Titans, who announced Monday that the sides couldn't come to an agreement over their future. Titans controlling owner Amy Adams Strunk, I guess her name is, acknowledged in a statement that the organization discussed a potential contract extension for Mike Mularkey, but that the two sides just couldn't come to an agreement. You know, for his career as a head coach, Mike Mularkey is 36-53. Not great. He was okay with the Titans. I think he was a little below 500. And while they may have just won the wild card game last week against Kansas City, there is a general feeling that the Titans underachieved this year. They wasted another season for quarterback Marcus Mariota. Let's be real honest. We don't know how many years Marcus Mariota has. That's not a knock on him. He just kind of seems like a fragile guy, doesn't he? Like, he can't stay healthy. So there is that worry. How many years do we have? He's a spectacular talent, but how many years do we have with him? Because he doesn't always seem healthy. Titans general manager John Robinson, he's expected to address the decision during a news conference. It sounds like the Titans maybe were open to extending Mularkey to a longer deal. His contract actually ran through 2018, but they wanted to make changes to his coaching staff, and Mularkey said, no, I don't want to make changes to my coaching staff. I like my staff the way it is. Now, here's the thing when you look at that. Look at his two big coordinators. His offensive coordinator, Terry Robiskie, 63 years old. His defensive coordinator, Dick LeBeau, 80 years old. Just keep those numbers in the back of your head. Because I know right now, the easy thing to do is pile on Mike Mularkey and say, you should have done more. You should have did better. Glad they got rid of him. Wasn't creative enough. Titans should have did better. Sick of what he was doing in Tennessee anyways. They need to go get a real coach. And I understand that sentiment. I really do. But I'm looking at these two guys. Robisky, 63. Dick LeBeau, 80. What is that, 143? 70-some-odd years as an average between his offensive and defensive coordinators? Has anyone considered the idea that maybe, just maybe, Mike Mularkey didn't want to be the guy responsible for putting these two guys in the old folks' home? This man should be praised, not fired. Why are we hammering him? So he didn't want to fire a couple of old guys who don't have much time left. Come on, cut him a little slack. Here's the weird thing that I do want you to think about when considering Mike Mularkey, okay? Mike Mularkey is now out of a job. He went 20-21 as the head coach of the Titans. They fired him. Okay, seems fair. Little below 500. They had some expectations. This was a team that was built, it looked like, maybe to win something this year, and he didn't win anything. Hey, you lose your job. That's how that works. But here's the thing. Andy Reid, the guy that lost to Mularkey in the playoffs, still has his job. Do you grasp the gravity of that? Think about that for a second. Andy Reid was up 21-3 at home on the man that just got fired for underachieving and managed to lose to Mike Mularkey. And he still has a job. Not only does he still have a job, it really wasn't even considered. And we talked about it last week. It probably shouldn't be considered. Andy Reid is a good coach. We know that. Is he going to lose the big game? Yes, of course he is. But he's still a good coach. He lost to Mike Mularkey. Mularkey beat him at home in the playoffs, down 21-3. Mularkey is the guy that... I just can't. Okay, let's get to those NFL games that took place over the weekend. Because we did see some crazy games. The conference championship games are now set. And of course, we'll get to those upcoming games later in the week. But right now, let's take a look at what did happen in the playoff games over the weekend. You know, I told you last week that if the Philadelphia Eagles were actually going to win a game in these playoffs, or two, or three, they were going to have some people step up around Nick Foles. You know, Carson Wentz, he may have been the kind of quarterback that could have won a playoff game by himself, or at least without a ton of help. But Nick Foles isn't that guy. You know, Nick Foles actually played reasonably well on Saturday. I don't know that he was great, but Foles went 23 of 30, 246 yards, no touchdowns, but also no interceptions. He fumbled twice, but the Eagles recovered both of them. The reason why this game was so close on Saturday, the Eagles couldn't generate any kind of a run game, and they did turn the ball over twice. They did have two fumbles that they didn't recover. Because the Philadelphia Eagles defense, they held the Falcons offense to less than 300 yards. If you hold the Falcons to less than 300 yards at home, you have to win that game. Like, you have to come up with a way to win that game. The Eagles get the win 15-10 at home. Couple guys stepped up. Defense stepped up, if nothing else. The defense got it done when they had to. We saw down late at the end of the game, had to get a stop. Can't let the Falcons score the touchdown. They came up with a clutch stop. I hate to bring this up, but you know I'm going to. Like, I really do. I hate to bring this up. Well, maybe I don't. But for this bit, I'm going to say that I hate to bring this up. Once again, Falcons quarterback Matt Ryan, not all that impressive. I can't not say it. Not all that impressive. Despite, again, all the weapons that he has. Matty Ice has Tevin Coleman. He has Devontae Freeman, who might, for the record, he might be the best running back in the league right now. That man runs hard. He runs with a load of steam every time he touches the ball. He has the best wide receiver in the game. Julio Jones. He has Mohamed Sanu. He has Taylor Gabriel. Why can't Matt Ryan generate more than 10 points in a playoff game? He isn't Phillip Rivers. He's not throwing to a bunch of guys we don't know. He isn't Aaron Rodgers playing behind some awful offensive line. And he isn't Matt Stafford playing in a city that destroys quarterbacks and their will to live and also has no weapons. Matty Ice has it pretty good in Atlanta, doesn't he? He's got weapons. We just talked about he has some of the best weapons in the league. He has a great cast around him. He has a very good offensive line. And we keep hearing how he is among the league's elite quarterbacks. Well, let's see. You got Aaron Rodgers. You got Tom Brady. You got Matt Ryan. Do you? Like, I can't see it. He has all that going for him. And still, I keep going back to these things. in the Super Bowl. They're up 28-3 and he can't generate a single point or even a clutch first down when he has to. And on Saturday, he can't score more than 10 points against a team without much offense. I'm just saying, from now on, until he does something important, he can't be Matty Ice. He's back to being Matty Zima. That's just who he is. I know we're told he's elite. I know they keep telling us he's elite. Hey, last year he won the MVP. Out of the 6, 7, 8 years he's been playing in the league, he's had 1 year that he's truly lived up to the hype. Matty Zima continues. Okay, the New England Patriots blew out the worst team that made the postseason, pounding the Tennessee Titans 35-14, and of course, getting head coach Mike Mularkey fired. You know, the Patriots racked up over 400 yards, and this game was never really in doubt. The Patriots are going to the AFC Championship for the 7th straight season. Do you realize this is the 12th time in the past 17 seasons? Pretty amazing run. What can you say? Pretty amazing run, right? Now, if you watched the game, and I hope that you didn't, because it was pretty awful, but you probably saw some of the weird calls that took place in this game. And pretty much every single one of these calls went against Tennessee. The Titans were flagged 10 times for 62 yards, while the Patriots only had 4 penalties for 37 yards. And there were some very strange calls. One of the weirdest calls came in the second quarter. The Patriots are facing a 4th and 5 from their own 14-yard line. Before the ball is snapped, New England is called for a false start. And it looked like they were going to have to then punt from their own 9-yard line. You're thinking, hey, Tennessee has a chance to have pretty good field position here. However, the play turned into a New England first down because officials changed their call on the field after they announced it, and the Patriots argued with them. The Patriots got the benefit of the penalty. They got the renewed set of downs. They went 81 yards and scored a touchdown. Now it's 21-7. Just a few plays later. Following the game, they asked referee Ron Torbert what happened. He explained, the line judge saw a defensive lineman jump into the neutral zone. He did not see the offensive player across from him move. The umpire saw the offensive player move, and he threw his flag for a false start, which is what we initially announced. When we got together and discussed it, we put it together. The defensive lineman across from the guard jumped into the neutral zone. That's what caused the false start. That's when we changed the ruling, which is the correct ruling. We changed it from false start to neutral zone infraction. Okay. A little weird. I don't know that I've ever seen them make a call and then kind of talk and then, we're going to change the call. Like, I've seen a lot of coaches argue it. Like, you see that all the time. What are you calling? Come on. That's not right. Oh, okay. We'll change it. I haven't seen it get changed. They changed it. That wasn't all. In the second quarter, the Titans were facing a 3rd and 4 from their own 27-yard line. The Titans appeared to convert the third down, 13-yard pass from Marcus Mariota to Eric Decker, and Eric Decker actually caught it. I know, amazing. The refs called an offensive pass interference against Decker. I've watched the replay. It's iffy. Like, you could call it. Is it much of a call? No. What was worse is that the flag wasn't thrown until after the play completed. The Titans would have had a first down in Patriots territory with the score still at 7-7. Again, another tough call goes against the Titans. And of course, the Patriots benefit from all this. Following the game, you started to hear conspiracy theories coming out of the woodwork. The NFL rigged the game. They know that league ratings are down. They need their beloved golden boy, Tom Brady, in there with the Patriots to try to get them back in the Super Bowl. Hey, no one wants to see the Titans in the AFC Championship. This is all fixed. This is all just manipulated so that the Patriots get back to the Super Bowl because they need the TV ratings. Hey, both of those are bad, bad calls in my opinion. I don't understand how you call it one way, you announce it, and then you discuss some things and then you change it. Haven't seen that happen. The call against Decker, it's kind of a ticky-tack call, and it's extremely late. I have a little bit of a problem with that. They helped the Patriots, no question about that. And I'm anything but a Patriots supporter. Hey, I am counting down the seconds until their deal with the devil runs out. It is coming. But I do have a few problems with the conspiracy theories. For one, yes, they got the strange call on the fourth down. I didn't realize you could just change a call like that, but whatever. Haven't seen that before. But then what about the next 81 yards? It wasn't like the refs said, hey, you know what? We got this wrong. We originally called a false start. It was actually an encroachment on the defense. 81-yard penalty, first and goal. That's not what happened. They gave him 5 yards on a first down. The Titans could have forced a punt any time. Okay. So maybe people are saying, yes, they didn't give him those 81 yards, but that got them started. And the Patriots, let's be honest, don't need that much help. Here's another problem. Let's say, I don't even want to make this even. Let's say for a second, those exact same calls, the pass interference and the switched play on the fourth down, went against the Patriots instead of for the Patriots. Let's just say that it happened. The Titans are going to punt. The ref throws the flag, backs up the Titans, then changes it and gives them a first down instead. As bizarre as all of that is, do you think the New England Patriots would have lost this game? What if they had called Chris Hogan or Danny Amendola for the push-off on a key third down? Do you think the Patriots would have lost to the Titans? Like I said, forget making it even. Let's give advantage to Titans instead of Patriots. Who wins the game? The Patriots would have still won the game, no question, 10 times out of 10. Do you know why? Because the Patriots are a better football team and they execute when they have to. And that pains me to admit that, but it's absolutely true. Here's another question for the conspiracy theories. That the Patriots must be in the playoffs to generate ratings. How do you explain that other AFC game? Was that manipulated for ratings? Because I would think Patriots Steelers would have been a much better ratings bonanza than the Jacksonville Jaguars. So what happened there? How did we kind of miss the boat on that one?
Well, yeah, you know, they manipulated the whole thing so New England gets in.
Well, then why would you put the Jaguars through? Nobody wants to watch them. Like, nobody wants to watch them. Why didn't they manipulate that one? I don't buy that for a second. And I hate the Patriots. This isn't a conspiracy, folks. The Patriots make plays when they have to, and that's why they win. Hey, speaking of those other Sunday games, we still need to get to those. The Jacksonville Jaguars are somehow, bizarrely, still playing football, and there is a very good reason why they're still playing football. And the New Orleans Saints made a mistake that we have seen before. But it was another very, very costly mistake. We'll get to both of those right after this. Just a quick reminder, make sure that you do any of that post-holiday or Valentine's Day shopping that you need to over at lootcrate.com/dailydose, where you can find the latest pop culture collectibles featuring your favorite TV shows, movies, and video games. January's Loot Crate, you can still get that for a few more days. The theme is called Discover. It features items from Rick and Morty, X-Files, Harry Potter, and Westworld. The best part about ordering from Loot Crate, when you check out, make sure you enter Daily Dose in the coupon box. We will get you 10% off of your order. And if you go over to Loot Crate, I'm telling you, you will find a number of things over there. If you can think of it, they probably have it. Go check out lootcrate.com. Okay, so if the NFL was manipulating scores, like I said, I have a hard time thinking they would have been pulling strings to make sure to get Blake Bortles into the AFC Championship game. But the Jaguars racked up 545 yards on Sunday in Pittsburgh to beat the Steelers 45-42 and send the Steelers home for the year. And I know we're going to start getting this week. We're going to start getting the, you know, Blake Bortles really stepped up in the clutch on Sunday. He wasn't that great. Like, if you watched the game, you saw it. If you didn't, just look at his stat line. Bortles went 14-26, 214 yards, one touchdown. It's okay. But here was the thing. Jacksonville ran the ball right down the Steelers' throat for 164 yards and four touchdowns. And while so much of the talk this week is going to focus on the Jaguars and their resiliency getting here, and I'm not taking away from that, their defense has been very, very good all year. Blake Bortles has been okay, but they ran the ball and they smashed Pittsburgh in the mouth on Sunday. I want to discuss more how Pittsburgh melted down and what exactly caused them to fold. Because all season, the Steelers looked like the most talented team in the AFC, maybe even the league, just talent-wise. And yet all year they've struggled to reach anything near their full potential. Maybe this was the loss of linebacker Ryan Shazier. Lost to a spinal injury, heart and soul of that defense. That defense was playing much better with Shazier on the field. Maybe it was just that. Maybe Jacksonville is a really, really bad matchup for this team for whatever reason. They just don't match up well with Jacksonville. Or, and I'm just throwing this out there, maybe the Steelers are a big soap opera and they kind of deserved what they got. Think about this group. You have Big Ben threatening retirement last year. I don't think there was any question he was going to retire, but we know that Big Ben kind of likes to be hugged every once in a while, right? You have Antonio Brown filming the locker room and filming that whole thing and getting in trouble. Worst thing in the world? No. Smartest thing in the world? Again, no. You have Le'Veon Bell saying that if he gets franchised next year for his multi-millions that he's going to make, he might just retire. I'm just going to get it. If they franchise me again and give me all that money, then I'm just going to retire. This is all drama queen diva nonsense. You know, we always talked about this in coaching. We always said who you are shines the brightest in the biggest games. So let's say you're not that tough of a team. And like, you know deep down that you're not that tough, but you're just kind of hoping maybe they can just kind of rally tonight and come up with tough plays when they have to. In the biggest game, we're going to see you're not that tough. Maybe you have too many egos. Maybe you have guys pulling in different directions. In the biggest game of the year, whether it's a playoff, maybe it's a big conference game, whatever it is, in the biggest game, that's going to come through. Think about the Steelers this year in big games. Not quite good enough to beat the Patriots. Got blasted by a Jaguars team that, let's be real clear, is inferior to them in talent. Yeah, the Steelers are who we thought they were.
But they are who we thought they were. And we let them off the hook.
They kind of have a lot of drama around them. They kind of have a lot of silly diva stuff around them. And it showed up in the biggest game. The soap opera took another step and had another cliffhanger. Oh, and this time you get sent home for the year and the cliffhanger has to last until next season because you're done. Disappointing year for the Pittsburgh Steelers. Okay, last game. We talked about it on Friday in our weekend preview. Thought it might end up being the game of the weekend. Took a little while, but it eventually lived up to the hype. The Minnesota Vikings survived the New Orleans Saints on Sunday thanks to one of the craziest finishes that we've seen recently, I guess. The Vikings led this game 17-0 at halftime. Looked like they might run away with it. But in the second half, New Orleans kind of got going. Drew Brees led the comeback. And Case Keenum did exactly what I said he couldn't do. He turned it over. He threw that interception in the third quarter that led eventually to a Saints touchdown. And in the second half, he couldn't really get much going offensively. The Vikings got just two field goals in the second half until the very end. With just over a minute to play, Drew Brees led a pretty gutsy drive, and the Saints got a field goal to take a 24-23 lead. The game might be over. The Vikings offense has been stifled in the second half. They get out to about their own 40, but Keenum throws a few incomplete passes. It is not looking good for Minnesota and the home crowd. Best case scenario at this point, they throw a long pass near the sideline, get out of bounds, and try a long field goal. And remember, we had said, don't trust your field goal kicker if you're Minnesota. You better win by a touchdown. But the Saints took away the sideline, so that's not going to work. They were actually sending two guys out to the sideline. They were doubling you on the sideline. Third and 10, 14 seconds left to play. And this is why we love sports from Fox Sports.
To save time, that's going to be where Keenum's going to try to work the ball on the boundary. Keenum steps into it, passes, caught, digs, sideline, touchdown, unbelievable, Vikings win it!
Vikings win 29-24 on the walk-off touchdown. Now, if you didn't see it, Saints safety Marcus Williams, he dives to hit Stephon Diggs and end the game. He whiffs completely on the hit. And I actually had a few people reach out to me on Twitter and say, what is Marcus Williams thinking? You know, it's the exact same scenario as the Denver Broncos divisional playoff game back in 2013 against the Baltimore Ravens. It's fourth and long. Joe Flacco heaves up a long pass for Jacoby Jones. Broncos safety Raheem Moore, he envisions himself being the hero. He's going to make the game-ending interception. And he whiffs. He misplays the ball. Jones scores, and the Ravens would win in overtime. On Sunday, Williams thinks he's going to nail Stephon Diggs. He's going to be the hero. He's going to make the play of the game. Big hit, knocks him down. He's going to stand over. Game's over. He's going to look up at the crowd and say, hey, this game is over. That's it. We win. We're going on. It's a millisecond decision. And he makes the wrong one. Not only does he miss Diggs, he takes out his teammate, cornerback Ken Crawley, who might have at least had an outside chance at catching Diggs. The only thing he had to do was let him make the catch and make a sure-handed tackle, and the game was over. Hey, I'm going to be the hero. I'm going to make the big play. As hard as it is, it's hard to blame him. He thinks he's making the right play. Should have made the safe play and just made the tackle. He tries to make the hero play and gives up the touchdown. Here's a weird side note to the whole game. Vikings were 5.5-point favorites. They score the touchdown to go up 29-24. They're up 5. Time is out. By rule, they have to attempt a point after. But the game's over, so the Vikings elected to kneel on the ball and leave. The point after would have made the spread 6, and the Vikings would have covered. Instead, they kneeled on the ball. The Saints covered the 5.5-point spread. And remind us all why you should never, ever, 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 ever bet on sports. Hey, tomorrow is Wednesday. We do have some more NFL to talk. We do have some breaking sports news to talk. And as we always do every Wednesday, we will have our Daily Dose Hump Day Power Rankings. You know you have to tune in for that. Have to say thank you so much for listening to the Daily Dose. For all of you that share the show, that tell your friends, that email us, that text us, message us, whatever it is, thank you so much. It is appreciated. Have to say thank you to GSP. Could not do any of this without you. Have a great Tuesday. I will see you all tomorrow.
Mojo. One man.
I'm 38 this year, and I said to myself, I'm going to do a marathon before I'm 40.
Two experts.
There's no juice left when you're doing a marathon. It's all gone.
One huge challenge.
Wow, I can't believe I've just done my first run with Mo Farah.
Mojo, an 18-week marathon training audio show starring Sir Mo Farah, Joe Wicks, and George Lamb. Listen free with your 30-day trial at audible.co.uk/run. $7.99 per month after 30 days. Renews automatically.